Earlier this week, people in countries right around the world marked Earth Day, an annual reminder of our responsibility to protect our planet for future generations. According to the organisers, over a billion people, politicians, celebrities, students, faith communities, took part in activities to raise awareness, promote clean-up campaigns, or simply spark greater reflection on why and how we are called to become better stewards of God's creation. One Irish missionary who's dedicated several decades of his life to galvanising greater environmental awareness within the Catholic Church is Columban Father Sean McDonagh, the author of numerous books, articles, blogs, and a regular participant at international conferences on the environment. Father Sean was passing through Rome this week and spoke to me about the issues at stake at the UN summit to be held in Rio de Janeiro in June, 20 years on from the first landmark Rio Earth Summit. Father Sean McDonagh, welcome back to our studios here. You were at the original Rio Summit, weren't you?
Yes, I was. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
It was a landmark event by any calculation, wasn't it? What do you think are the expectations for this summit 20 years on?
Well, as you say, it was a landmark event in 1992. The two things that came out of it structurally were the UN Framework Conference on Climate Change. That was agreed there, and people signed up to it. Unfortunately, they didn't put any timeline or they didn't put any limits. So it was do the best you can, mainly because of the intervention of President George Bush, not George W., his father. The second one, it was the whole area of the UN Framework on Biodiversity. Now, that is a major issue, and it has been a major issue ever since then. So two things I think need to happen. We need to be much more focused on climate change. And part of the problem of the last number of years, I've been at the various conference of the parties, the latest one in Durban, whereas the dialogue has continued, we're not making any substantive progress. We're not, in a sense, putting timelines on reducing carbon emissions.
Why is that? Why is there no agreement on this?
Selfish reasons. Well, I'll give you, for one situation, everyone agreed in Copenhagen that we have to keep the level below 2 degrees Celsius, but they didn't say how we're going to do it or a timeline for doing it. Partly because the United States, although you have a president who understands climate change in comparison to his predecessor, you have a Congress that's controlled by Republicans who don't actually often believe in climate change. So he, in a sense, can't move the US position. Then you have the US against China and India. Basically, the US wants agreement, but everyone in on the same terms. China and India are saying, let's look historically from the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. 90% of the greenhouse gases that have gone into the sky have come from northern nations, Europe, North America, Australia. So it wouldn't be fair to bring us in on those same terms. Also, you have a population of 350 million people. What percentage are living in dire poverty? Look at us in China. Yes, we brought 300 million people out of poverty into the middle class in the last 30 years. But we have 500 million people living on $2 a day. We have 200 million people living on less than $1 a day. So, look, we shouldn't be forced to come into these agreements on the same terms that you're coming in. That will have to be broken at Rio Plus 20.
Is there any hope for breaking this impasse?
Well, I saw the last three conferences I was at, the one on in Cancun, then the one last summer, the UN Conference on Sustainable Development, and the Durban, it wasn't broken, no. People skirted around it. Things were, for example, on the area of climate change. More money went into what they call the Adaptation Fund. That they're talking now about $100 billion being in that between now and 2020. And also where it will be placed. It won't be under the aegis of the World Bank because third world countries won't want that. But on the substantive issue, how are we going to reduce greenhouse gas emissions? Not too many initiatives are on the floor. Hopefully, the pressure that, the expectations of 20 years on, hopefully that will focus people's minds and say, look, we have to start taking steps now. The tragedy of Durban was they said, yes, we'll agree to an agreement by 2015. So you're just kicking the ball or the can down the road by another 3 or 4 years. And the tragedy is, on both biodiversity and on climate change, unless we do it soon, what we do will make no difference and it will be irreversible in terms of the impact on succeeding generations. Which brings me back to the point that I'm focused on my life on. This is why religious people should be very much involved in this, because it is a question of life and death, irreversible damage to the planet, so that other species, but particularly human beings, will find it an inhospitable place to live. And certainly that is an area of life that is intimately bound up with religion.
Rio 1992 also marked a very significant moment, didn't it, for the NGO community, and in particular for the faith communities, finding a voice to realise that they could influence United Nations and other international organisations. How strong a voice do you think has this faith community become in terms of these crucial issues that you're talking about?
Well, it has become a voice, both directly and very often indirectly, like, for example, to agencies like Caritas Internationale. They were not there in the early years. They're very much there now. They're very much pointing out, though, the impact on humankind, you know. In Durban, I spoke with many people there on climate change, for example. You had an excellent document from the Pontifical Academy of the Sciences, which came out last May. It's called The Faith of Mountain Glaciers in the Anthropocene. It's an extraordinary document, because what does that mean? They're basically saying that humans are bringing about changes that are of a geological order of magnitude, like the lower Carboniferous period. That took 25 million years. They're saying now we have done that kind of change because of the way our emissions into the atmosphere, etc., in less than 200 years. So it was excellent, clear. They talked about getting back to 350 parts per million of greenhouse gas emissions. Or if that didn't happen, what the consequences would be. Now, what I would like to see happening with the Holy See is that you bring that information together with the Caritas and marry them, so that we have a concern for humans, but we're concerned for the wider world as well, because we know that humans will not survive if the wider world is destroyed. So I'd also like to see within the church, and I've talked to people, the people who have a dedication around these issues, like I was talking to people this morning, if they came in with me to the Durban conference and they heard people talk about LULUCF and all other kinds of acronyms, for 20 minutes they may not have an idea what's going on, because this is the language that has built up over the last two decades. So you need people there who can focus what's going on, and particularly focus on areas that have a moral and religious side to them. For example, the Adaptation Fund. Because what's the Adaptation Fund aimed at doing? Take a country like Peru. You say, well, climate change isn't a big issue there. But of course it's a big issue there, because it's leading to the erosion of the glaciers on the mount on the Andes. Now, if they go completely, a city like Lima has no water. It's 11 million people. So that's a horrendous impact. Where are they going to go? How are they going to adapt? These are the kind of questions. Now, religious people should be talking about that this has happened because people living in the first world have lived and used energy in such a way that they caused this damage. And we have to make restitution. Traditional moral theology, if you stole something or if you did damage to your neighbour, you had to make restitution. And it's those kind of terms that I think would capture people's imaginations more than the kind of secular language that is always wrapped in. But we have to be competent. We can't go in and say, well, in the first one, I will know enough to be able to engage it. The answer is you won't.
So you really need professional, skilled specialists in this field of climate change. Do you see that kind of training going on in the church?
No, I don't. And you see what happened last year in Durban, that the local nuncio and maybe one or two other peoples in the nunciature there, they come. But as I say, they could spend 3 days there and not understand a single sentence. And I don't blame them. It's not what they're doing. But there are groups within the church who would be willing and have the capacity and have the training to be able to engage with these processes. And as you say, about Rio was the first place where non-government organisations and church groups were given a place where they can impact on decisions. And I think that's very, very important, that we bring a moral and religious dimension to these discussions.
Our Sunday Visitor has just published a collection of Pope Benedict's appeals on the environment. How much do you think that kind of leadership voice, we think also of the Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew, how much can these leadership voices influence at all public policy in these areas?
Oh, I think very much, because people are looking for leadership in this area. The one thing I would say, though, is we have to have it integrated into everything we say and do. And if we don't do that, people will see, well, they're talking one day about the environment being very seriously, and another day they're talking about something else, and they're not making connections. The biggest thing we need to do now is to make connections so that the impact, for example, of some economic policies, if that's shown in the environment, we in church make those connections. And people want to see those connections, but they also want to see, make sure that we are consistent. We should have the capacity to do that, and it would be wonderful for Catholics, but also for other people. Our whole area of being pro-life, if we work, for example, with the Convention on Biodiversity, we're showing we're concerned for life, not just of human beings, but all of life, because we know, of course, that if life ecosystems are destroyed, the place will be inhospitable for human life as well.
My thanks there to Columban Father Sean McDonough.